Hello, I'm Ken Fireman, Managing Editor for Sage Business Researcher. I'm joined today by Sharon O'Malley, a journalist and journalism professor who has written our new report on sexual harassment in the workplace. Hello, Sharon.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for joining me today. Let me begin by asking this. We're at a moment now that has been described by many people as a long overdue reckoning, both for men who have been getting away with sexual harassment and for the institutions that they work for. Does your reporting bear this out?
Well, it sure does. You know, the fact that so many women have spoken up with their allegations of sexual harassment and sexual abuse, just the fact that just a few high-profile cases opened the floodgates this wide tells me that the public does believe this is long overdue. If the public reaction hadn't been so immense, if it turned out, for example, if it was just a few bad apples, then it might seem like these cases were isolated, but that hasn't been the case at all.
Okay. And do you think that what's brought us to this moment is the fact that women in increasing numbers have been willing to come forward and talk about this?
Well, the women have been willing to come forward in increasing numbers because of the publicity surrounding the high-profile scandals. You know, until about a year ago, if I had asked workplace experts about sexual harassment, or if I had even looked at the incidence of claims filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, I might have drawn the conclusion that sexual harassment wasn't a huge concern in the workplace. But about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, an engineer at Uber named Susan Fowler accused the company of allowing sexual harassment to run rampant. It was obvious, blatant sexual harassment. And it went on in the company apparently because the men who were allegedly doing it were superstars there. And executives sort of looked the other way because they didn't want to have to fire their superstars. So Susan Fowler sort of started to open the floodgates. But when Harvey Weinstein and when Matt Lauer were accused in the fall and the winter, that really opened the floodgates.
Right, right. Is there reliable data on the prevalence of harassment in the workplace?
There is. There's a lot of surveys on it, and there's also data from the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and it's very reliable and it's very consistent. And it says approximately 75% of women have experienced some form of sexual harassment at work. The thing is, though, that only about a quarter of them report it, either to the EEOC or to the courts or even to their own supervisors. And mostly the ones who don't say anything are afraid they'll be retaliated against if they do, even though that kind of retaliation is illegal. They're afraid that they will be fired or harassed more at work or not believed. And so they just keep it to themselves.
Are the experts that you've been talking to, do they believe that this may change because of the more open climate that's been created?
They say it already has changed. So it's too soon to know if there will be more complaints to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And apparently there haven't been too many more lawsuits filed. But what's happening internally is that women have been emboldened by this to come forward and talk to their own supervisors and tell that it's happening at work, because they can see that companies are beginning to really react to it. They're not sweeping it under the rug anymore.
Mm-hmm. The most highly publicized cases of harassment have been in high-profile industries like entertainment, mass media, and politics. But I believe your reporting has found that this problem really runs the gamut of the business landscape. Is that right?
It is right. One of my sources literally told me that no industry is immune from this, and no person is immune. It happens at the highest levels, and it happens at the lowest levels in the workforce.
Are there particular industries where this is that have been most susceptible to this?
There are. Industries with low-skill, low-wage workers seem to be the most susceptible, like hotels and fast food restaurants and stores where people work in retail, like as cashiers. So those are the industries that where you find it most prevalently. and then also in industries where women traditionally have been underrepresented. So in manufacturing, in construction, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, those are not the industries that have been most in the spotlight for obvious reasons. Is there some hope that things may be changing for women in those industries as well, the industries that are much less high profile?
I think that there is. A lot of companies, and these are not the big high-profile companies, although they're certainly doing it too, but a lot of companies require employees to take an annual course to learn what sexual harassment is and how to avoid doing it. Companies that can prove that they're doing everything they can to prevent it and that they're making it easy for women to report it seem to do better in court when they're sued for sexual harassment. So companies are doing more than that. But the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is encouraging employers to do even more than that. They want them to educate their employees about not just about what sexual harassment is, but about how to treat each other in a more civil manner in the workplace. So training that helps people understand the value of treating their colleagues with respect and the value of being civil to everyone at work all the time.
Well, that would be good in the workplace and in a lot of other places as well. So that's a hopeful sign. You mentioned the training programs. How are these training programs evolving? Are companies reshaping them in light of their experiences?
They are. There's some research that indicates the 1 hour online video training is pretty ineffective. Also, companies have zero tolerance policies that seem to be pretty ineffective because at so many companies, they're not enforced. They're just policies on the books. So what seems to be effective in the workplace is changing its culture, starting at the top, to one where any kind of incivility is just not tolerated and where even the biggest money makers in the company just are not immune from punishment if they misbehave in this way. And another thing that human resources consultants are pushing is something called bystander training. They're teaching people how to intervene when they see sexual harassment taking place. So a witness can interrupt the sexual harassment, or a witness could report it on behalf of the victim if the victim was afraid of retaliation.
Mm-hmm. In terms of change at the top, I believe you mentioned in your report that the head of Fidelity Investments has recently done something pretty significant and pretty striking to try to change the culture in her company.
Right. So the head of Fidelity is a woman, and they did have two pretty high-profile incidents of sexual harassment, and they had to dismiss two big money makers from their firm. And that woman, CEO, moved her offices from the C-suite down to the floor where all of the traders are. So she's sitting among them every day.
Mm-hmm. And is that, well, what's the thinking behind that? What does she think? Her name is Abigail Johnson, right? Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah.
So it appears that what she's thinking is that if they know that she's watching them. So she's coming down and being very obvious about watching them. Like it's not going to happen under her watch and she's right there. Don't do it in front of her face.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I've been speaking, as I said, with Sharon O'Malley, who has written the Sage Business Researcher Report on sexual harassment in the workplace. And Sharon, thank you for joining me.
You're welcome.